A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
For the best Championship, League One and League Two coverage, Acton Mool recommends the Football League paper. It's got it all covered. For the complete EFL picture, get the Football League paper, £1.50 every Sunday, or visit theleaguepaper.com for a variety of digital subscriptions. The Football League paper. It's got it covered.
You're listening to Acton Mool, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Huge welcome, dear listeners, to Acton Mool with a special guest this Monday afternoon. It's Mr. Merv Payne. Welcome to the show, Merv.
Hello, thanks for having me, Nick.
We're speaking about your new book. You are prolific. If nothing else, Merv, you're a prolific author, mate. A new one out now on the... The '90s, Mill in the '90s, which we'll come on to shortly. But I thought I'd just trouble you for your opinion from what you saw of it of Saturday's what can we call it anticlimactic start to the season?
I think so. But I think you and I are both long in the tooth enough now to know that quite often the first game of the season is it's nothing more than an extended pre-season friendly. Sometimes, is it? You know, you get teams feeling each other out, and the managers aren't quite sure on what. Not 100% sure on what to do with the players they've got. And obviously, we were missing Troy Parrott and Ryan Woods and Marlon Romeo. So I think I tweeted about this on Saturday evening as well. I mean, this at this same stage last year, Charlton had just come up and they won at Blackburn and it raised a few eyebrows. And Charlton fans were getting a bit overexcited and we're talking about back-to-back promotions and how Lee Bowyer would do fair as a coach in the Premier League. And then fast forward 12 months and they're winning 2-0 at Crewe and they're talking about, you know, winning the League One again. So
salutary lesson for us all.
Perspective, to be honest. And we've had so many false dawns, you know, opening day wins and we start getting our hopes up and then before you know it, it's... So I'm not worried at all about the first game, really.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I you're right about the first game syndrome and you can read way too much into it. I think you can read way much into pre-season results and first games of the season. I don't know how much of it you saw because we're in this very weird iFollow zone now of no one in the stadium, Merv, and we're all dependent on this sketchy, scratchy iFollow stream. Did you get much of it from Saturday's game? Or
I tend to have a really low patience threshold with this sort of thing. As soon as it freezes once or twice, I just get the ump and go back to soccer Saturday, to be honest. I've got no patience with that sort of thing.
I lost my rag with it last week, so I'd logged on to watch the Crawley game, and of course we had 20-something minutes of a frozen screen from Crawley. But it's going off topic slightly. I mean, the stream for me on Saturday was okay. I mean, praise where it's due, it was okay. But I just think that iFollow as a service, we had the old proverbial one camera on the halfway line at Crawley.
Yeah,
which
one camera, no replay.
Which is piss poor service, Merv, when you're paying a tenner for...
Exactly, 10 quid, I mean.
We're in 2020, you know, there are people out there with iPhones that can give a better service than what we've got
there. Some of the dodgy streams you can pick up on Facebook and stuff like that are 10 times better than this. Well, they used to be when the fans were allowed in. But, you know, so I've heard anyway. But, yeah, I mean, there's no excuse for it, and it's just, I think it's typical of the EFL. Do it on the cheap. charge a premium for it and
ripping people off, basically. Yeah. I mean, Saturday's production values were better, decent HD camera and cameras behind a gold and lower level views to the bench, so I can't complain at that. And I personally, I don't know what listeners' experience of it on a Saturday were, but I thought it was, you know, that the service, the stream was okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, going back to the game, obviously there was we were kind of out muscled in the first half, I felt, but then that could be rustiness. I was interested because Aaron said on our pre-season show, Mervyn, I'm interested to see what you think, that we lack a bit of creative depth. And I do wonder, because that with Ryan Woods sitting on the bench on Saturday, being Stoke lone tired, expression, we did look a bit bereft of creativity, didn't we, going forwards?
Yeah, I think that's a hangover from the Neil Harris more direct days.
Yeah.
And I think it's something like goal scorers. I think it's quite hard to rectify in the transfer market because players like that are really well sought after, aren't they? And the bigger clubs tend to snap them up, and it's a matter of getting lucky, I think, with a team of Mills' sort of point of view, Mills' standing. So, funnily enough, harking back to the sort of the 90s era, the Alex Ray signing.
Yeah.
He was brought in to replace Herlock, and at the time, no one had heard of him. Everyone thought, you know, who the hell is this? This unknown guy from Scotland and
Falkirk, I believe.
Within two or three games, it was obvious the bloke was pure class, and you're starting thinking, well, yeah, we got hold of someone this good. It takes that sort of stroke of luck, I think, for especially a creative player to, you've got to fit in. I mean, you look at Bolton, I know a Bolton fan who's despairing. I think they signed 18 players, had a brilliant pre-season, and they started on Saturday losing home to Forest Green, and they bought like Owen Doyle, who was like top scorer in League Two. They've gone out and they've just snapped up what they think is the perfect recipe for promotion, and it could just backfire on them, you know. So
it don't work that way, does it? It's I had a fascinating conversation on Friday with Radio Stoke, because they were doing a pre-game show for the board draw, 0-0 draw, as it turned out on Saturday. But they were intrigued, stroke fascinated by Alex Aldrich, our former head of recruitment, Aldo, going up to Stoke. And because they don't know him, I think they see him as some kind of mystic guru of, the finder of talent out there. And I think I took him aback a little bit when I said, it touches on what you just said about Bolton there, that in the world of football recruitment, I think luck plays its part. I think it's more, stick a pin in the tail of a donkey or something,
Oh, it is, yeah.
You know, you turn up the Alex, every Alex Ray, you get five Tom Elliotts, So I don't know if I debunked his reputation in Stoke, possibly.
I would think it's interesting. There was a story, I don't know if you saw, I think it was South London Press, where Gary Rowe admitted they almost invested £1 million in a young player, young wingback, I think he said.
Right.
And he was about 6 months, he needed about 6 months of development. So that's why they decided to plump for Malone instead.
Right.
I heard that Stoke had bought a youngster, I don't know, I can't remember where from now, that Mill were interested in. And I'm wondering if the two stories were connected.
Possibly.
Possibly. Said, right, well, Rowett didn't want him, so he's sort of taken him with him. But who knows? That whole recruitment thing mystifies me, to be honest. I still remember the days when a manager would meet his prospective player on a service station on the M1. Sign him, or someone like Cuffy and Taylor would drive to their house on a Sunday afternoon and doorstep them and say, look, just sign for us, will you? And that was it, the deal was done. But it seems to be like, I don't know, everything's a big highfalutin business transaction these days, isn't it? With so many whole entourages involved in it, it just seems bonkers.
It's got to be dressed in the clothes of the corporate deal. And I haven't come on the show today to disrespect Alex. I know him, but I mean, I do wonder. You know, if you watch enough football, I mean, I think anyone could be a football recruit.
We've all thought, you go to your local non-league game, and they play someone, and someone the other team looks pretty. Charlie Bobble at Swindon when he was playing for Paul Town.
Yeah.
The guy kept writing into the Lion Roars saying, I moved to Paul a few years ago, and they got this bloke called Charlie Austin. He's amazing. So I kept writing to Mill, telling him to come have a look at him, and they ignored me. And then, of course, it's another stream of letters to Lyme Roars, basically saying, I told you so, and, you know, look what you could have won. But I think we're all scouts on the quiet, aren't we? We all think we can.
Yeah, and look, of course, football clubs, I mean, not meaning you here, but, you know, I mean, football clubs draw their fair share of of flakes and fruitcakes and nutcases, yeah. don't they? So, you know, I mean, you never know. But I'm sure every team, every club has a story like a Charlie Austin or, you know, as was alleged to be Lionel Messi, not being picked up by Millwall by Theo Pathetis, you know, whether true or not, I don't know. But no, I mean, an anticlimactic start Saturday. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if we do bring anyone else in. I thought Ryan Woods was missed. And the great unknown factor that is Troy Parrott up front. We don't know what we're going to get from Big Troy. But it was a very Millwall start to the season, 0-0. And I think it's probably about as much as we can say about it. I'm just reading the Football League paper and Michael O'Neill was moaning about a late penalty shout. I did think it looked like a good penalty shout in real time, but I suppose that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I think any Millwall fan that was at the Stoke away game last season, which was the start of the year, it sounded like a very similar game. And I think O'Neill has obviously gone in there when they were a club in crisis, sort of heading for League One. And I think he's very much got this sort of batten down the hatches attitude and this sort of play to not certainly away anyway, play to not lose sort of attitude. But they've got some quality, a bit like Klukas and players like that who you know will nick you a goal if you've got a half a chance. I think they could be quite a dark horse. I think we probably don't give them as much.
No, I agree. I mean, not long out of the Premier League. They were physical and big, and I think that will take you a long way in this division.
Master plan is O'Neill, and I think he's executing it quite well, and he'll probably be quite chuffed with a 0-0. But I, you know, it's a cliche, but I think perhaps the Mill of early last season, or perhaps two seasons ago, that probably would have been a late 1-0 defeat.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking. I think you think, you know, a Mill of old might have just ended up clawing defeat from the jaws of a draw sort of thing, but you never know with these sort of things, but I think the future's still pretty bright for us. I think, you know, we'll do okay.
I've picked out a few of my favourite tweets from the net just to close this little section. I'm going to disregard yours because you've actually said it about Charlton coming back. From Crewe, whereas in last year they were Premier League bound. I like that one. So you've said that already. Stolen my thunder. One I loved, and the, you know, Twitter is the source of much angst in the modern world, but also some of the funniest things I think that I've read. This one's from JP Millwall. You might have read this one, Merv. It says it was not a good performance, but JP was so happy we're back. He has a great uncle who's been wheelchair bound for 11 years, paralysed from the neck down. Okay. However, after Jed's misplaced 54th pass, he got up, walked over to the television and turned it off. Thank you, Millwall FC.
That's my favourite tweet of the weekend, definitely. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one.
There was that one, which I loved for its dark black humour. And then there was one by the always, always strong Bermondsey boy. Yeah. Who says there's a new show called Dez starring David Tennant as serial killer Dennis Nielsen, which he felt was going to be easier watching than a Millwall versus Stoke nil
draw. Yeah, it's a good point because it is one of those games. It's never, it very rarely inspires you, does it really?
It wouldn't be one that would grip the world audience, but there we are. That's the nature of the business. Nil draw. I was trying to tune into, trying to pay my tenner to watch the Cheltenham game. This is the level that we're at, listeners. But I couldn't get logged on earlier on, so. I'll try that later.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah. That plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Achtung, Millwall.
Hi, Kelly Webster, Millwall Lionesses. Just like to thank Achtung Millwall and all its listeners for all of your support. It really means a lot to us. Thank you.
But, Merv, thank you for that. The reason you're here is not to discuss Michael O'Neill's bruising encounter. It's your new work. You've produced another book, mate, on the 90s, an intriguing decade at Millwall.
Definitely.
We spoke last week briefly, and I put forward the proposition to you that the 90s didn't really start at Millwall until the move to the new stadium, which was in 1993-94. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because we had a couple of seasons after relegation at the end of the First Division days where we were still at Coldblow Lane. There was still... I think there was hope going to the new stadium, but there was some good football played in those. The Bruce Rioch and early era McCarthy era was amongst the best games, best football I think I've ever seen in a Millwall fan.
Era. I mean, we went into that first season down under Rioch with arguably a bigger and stronger, more experienced squad than the one we had in the two seasons in the top flight. You know, we had people like Malcolm Allen. We only played in the top flight and did well. And the people we brought in, and obviously we had Sheringham, we was able to keep hold of him. And the squad, I mean, you look at the team photo, loads of quality. Obviously, we had some good youth players, Kenny Cunningham coming through. And sort of that 1991 season, you look back, and the constant thought is, how on earth did we not run away with the league, really? There were some strong teams.
We should have done, in all honesty.
Wednesday, West Ham.
Yeah.
The two teams, obviously big teams, desperate to get back in the top flight. But even, there were four promotion places up for grabs, which makes it even more galling. That's because they were restructuring. They were restructuring the top flight back to 22 clubs. So they decided in Division Two they were going to promote four, relegate two. So I mean, apart from having probably one of our most impressive squads ever, we had, you know, when you think back to 72 when we missed out because we finished third when there's only two up.
Yeah.
To not be able to do it when it's four going up, top three were automatically promoted, then there's a playoffs. But it was the same old thing, the same old story that happens, which is what makes football so, you know, just so popular, I guess. But teams came out of nowhere, the likes of Oldham and Brighton.
Oldham were promoted, that's right.
Yeah. You never would have believed, at the start of the season, you'd have thought, now, there's only four teams in this. It's going to be West Ham, Sheffield Wednesday, Millwall and Newcastle. Newcastle almost went down.
Yeah.
And yet still managed to sort of put a spanner in the works for Millwall, I think. I think they might come to the Den and beat us. But yeah, I mean, only when I started delving into it did you start to sort of see more what it was about. And you actually then realise when you think about, or when you see, find out just what the Bruce Rioch era was like and how actually unpopular he was amongst probably the majority of the squad. You actually think, well, it's amazing we did as well as we did that season anyway. But it was quite an eye-opener because so you never truly know what goes on at a club until you speak to players at the time and they won't tell you the truth because they can't. Because
No.
They can't go into work the next day. But talking to Ian Dawes and Les Brierley about the Rioch era, and it's quite bizarre, really. I think one of the telling quotes was Les Brierley said that Rioch came up to him on one of the first days there, or after the first week, and said, I'm going to change this club. He didn't like the sort of the pally sort of social club sort of boys, you know, informal sort of atmosphere. He said, I'm going to change this club. And Les said to him, I don't think you will. but that was it. I mean, and it became then a battle. And it also took me to Ian Dawes, who was great to talk to and, you know, kindly provided the foreword for the book. And he said initially he thought Bruce Rioch coming in was good news for him because when he came to Millwall, they played a more direct style, which he wasn't used to at QPR. But he adapted to it because that's a sort of, you know, decent pro he was. But then he thought, right, Rioch comes in, he plays good football. I could be, you know, onto a winner here.
Yeah.
And he said it was his most miserable time of his career because Rioch, I got the impression Rioch just wanted rid of the old guard, the old Doherty players. And, you know, he had some bizarre tactics for putting players out in the cold, really. So I think when you look at that, it's not hard to see why they went on that ridiculous two-month run of not winning after that brilliant Sheffield Wednesday game in the league.
Yep.
Also equally remarkable that they sort of, I think, according to Ian Dawes, they sort of galvanised themselves and said, look, let's just bloody go for it, you know. in spite of what we think of the management sort of regime or his methods, let's dig in and let's get promotion. And unfortunately, you know, as both Les and Ian explained, it just didn't happen. Brighton playoff game, they just froze. It just one of those things.
The character of Bruce Rioch never ceases to fascinate me, and I don't know why this is so, because there's this odd contrast between the football that we played, which was perhaps the like I've said already, amongst the best I think I've ever seen a Mill team play, Merv, in terms of passing, movement, and some of the quality, some of the players we had to do so. And this really strange contrast with a highly unpopular sergeant major come, I don't know, middle management kind of figure in charge of it all. It's a very odd mixture. And I've never quite got my head around Bruce Rioch and, you know, his that kind of extreme swing from one thing to another. The two don't seem to go well together in the normal course of events.
Yeah. And obviously the thing is, he went to Bolton and had unparalleled success there, but I think it goes back to the whole Ian Holloway comment about Mill didn't get him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's that. And that was obviously, he went to Bolton and Bolton were quite happy to just do whatever he wanted and to just bow down to his every request and do exactly what he wanted to get the success, because they were in the third division at the time. Whereas, as we all know, Mill isn't that sort of club. You adapt to Mill, and probably the person that got that the best was John Doherty, I think, which it's no coincidence.
Yeah.
That led to our greatest ever sort of spell of success. But when you read what Doherty said about the club and the fans in stuff that was written at the time in the late 80s, he totally got it. You know, he walked in, he thought, I know exactly what to do here. You know, I know exactly how this place ticks. And he got it. And you wonder if perhaps Rioch had been a little bit more flexible, things could have been a bit different, because, you know, it was the best possible time to bounce back into the first division then, because things were changing so quickly. Money-wise, you know, I think 1 minute in the sort of mid-80s, television wasn't interested in covering football, and suddenly there was like a
billions
on, and ITV were even blown out of the water with Sky, and suddenly it just changed so quickly. And there was that, I think, what pushed on the plans for the new den was that there was that fear. There's always that. I think we've heard it a lot down at Mill, where if we don't do this, then we'll get left behind, and I think at the time there was sort of, I think Reg Burr was saying that, you know, if we don't move now, so you had the Taylor report, you know, post Hillsborough, and saying if we stay at the Den, we've got to reduce the capacity to like 10,000.
Yeah,
we'll have a crippling redevelopment bill. We'll basically be third or fourth division for forevermore. And that was like the emotional blackmail, I suppose, behind what was initially a really unpopular, you know, move at the time. I remember friends vowing never to go if they moved from the Den, which was crazy. But that was the sort of level of passion that the fans had for the old place, you know. And it was a shame that they couldn't sort of developed it in some way. But even then, it wouldn't have been the same. You know, you look at some of these grounds now that are I think Selhurst Park's a good example of a ground that back in the day of the terraces, I'm thinking like late 70s, when the Homestow was one huge big concrete bank, and you know, you had the Arthur Waite
and the White Horse Lane Inn was a big terrace, wasn't it?
And then they've done it. They tried to adapt it, and they put one of these god awful modern stands behind the goal. And
the building of the supermarket. I think Bolton did something like that, didn't they?
That's right. At Burnden Park. Well, yeah.
I mean, you've got your front cover is the great image of the fans on the pitch with the banner that says, "Here lies the Den, murdered by Reg Burr." I always thought that was harsh on Reg, but
I do, but so typically Millwall, so don't know, never one's for an understatement. Or and I remember seeing that on the day and just absolutely laughing my head off and thinking, that showed the level of affection people had for the ground. And I think it might sound controversial, but even that threat from Burr to say, well, you know, if we stay here, that's it, we're third division forevermore. And it might have been a handful of fans who said, so what? I'm happy to come here. And what it was a comment my dad made, which I used in the book at the time, when they first moved to the new ground. And I said, you know, what's it like? What do you think? What's your honest opinion? He said, I started coming to Mill in the 50s, or late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
And going to the Den barely changed all that time, right up until they left. There was a few little changes that, you know, obviously the fences went up and you know, but he said that was the sort of the comfort of it, was it was the same. And it was such a culture shock for, you know, obviously a lot of clubs built new stadium, that sort of thing, but I think a lot more fans were more open and excited about it than Millwall fans were, because the Den was so unique. And he said, you know, it was a real, that was really uncomfortable. Suddenly we're going to, you're getting that sort of feeling you get when you go to an away game to a fancy stadium, to, you know, to a nice, this is nice. And but yeah, and I think that probably explained why initially we didn't get off to a very good start, although we had one of our best home records in the first season at the new ground.
We did. And yeah. we went. Yeah. We went close to the playoff. Obviously that finished in mayhem. I mean, my memory of the new stadium, which for me is when, you know, the Millwall in the 90s arguably really starts for me. I don't know how you saw it, Merv. My feeling when I first walked into the new ground was almost overwhelming pride that we'd achieved this thing.
I was at the Sporting Lisbon opening game, and I thought that. I thought, this is what we need to do. You know, to use a quote from the Damned United, from Michael Sheen, who played Brian Clough when he first at Leeds, saying, things might be a bit different. You might pinch at first, have a pair of new shoes, but you'll get used to it. And that's what it felt like. It's very unmovable, but I thought, we can make it our own. And I saw a comment today on Twitter, actually, beneath my Alex Ray post.
Yeah.
And someone said, it might be, he said, I think a packed new Den is every bit as intimidating as good.
I would agree with that, Murph.
Yeah, and I totally agree. You've only got to think about Leicester in the Cup, I think, is a good example. Huddersfield in the playoff match. But I do think, and it's a common factor with modern stadiums, is they have to be packed to the rafters to generate that atmosphere.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, unless it's just me being nostalgic, I don't think it is. I think a lot of people, the old Den, you could have 3,000 in there, and if the drama was there, then the noise would match it. You know, I think I can remember days at the old Den when it was pissing down, and people would all sort of back up to get under the roof. So both sections are empty, and then you'd get like I remember playing Plymouth. I think it was Dockett's first season, and Plymouth were going well at the time.
Yeah,
I think we were 1-0 up and struggling. There's about 3,000 there, a shocking crowd, horrible day. And Plymouth equalised, and everyone thought, oh, that's it. I think we scored two more goals, we won it 3-1. The noise was ridiculous, and it was like there was 3,000 in there, and it's for a nothing game, really. And we weren't going up or down, but I think that's the only difference between a traditional stadium like the Den and a modern
version. I would agree with that. I mean, the new stadium proved to be a long-term blessing, but a short-term curse in a sense, because it did cost us money that in the end caught up with us by about the mid part of the decade. You know, we had that that strangest ever season, 95-96, where we were top of the table under Mick McCarthy.
Yes,
before being relegated with, I think it's the highest number of points to be relegated in that division.
But I mean, fortunately, that sort of, because I did intend to do the 90s in one book, to be honest, and it was a lockdown project. It's something I was going to spread over the course of the rest of the year after the Ordinary Boys came out, and because of lockdown, I suddenly found myself with a lot more time on my hands. And it's one of them, it just sort of flowed, you know, because there was so much going on. I mean, you look at, obviously, I wouldn't have written it if there hadn't been so much incident. It wouldn't have made very good reading. And with no disrespect to someone like Rochdale, but you look at Rochdale's 90s, I think they played in the same division for the whole 10 years, didn't get anywhere in the cups, and nothing really happens.
We're nothing if not dramatic, Merv, aren't we?
So once I got to about 230 pages in, I'd only got to the end of 94, 95. I don't want to edit it down too much, but I thought it's going to take two volumes, this, because 95, 96 deserves some plenty of air to room to breathe.
Absolutely. That's in part two in that case. This is part one that you've produced here. So the early years of the
ground being a blessing and a curse. I mean, that Derby playoff game was a classic example, because obviously the trouble. But then it was something that we wouldn't have happened a year earlier at the old Den, because obviously it wasn't that easy to get on the pitch.
Well, we had medieval fencing and spiking keeping us at bay, didn't we?
In the fallout to that, which I go into in a fair bit of detail in the book, there's all sorts of, there was debate programmes with Jimmy Greaves and John McCruick given over to discussing which punishment was at first. You know, it's actually quite bizarre. But you had the Derby chairman, I think it was, is it Pickering?
I can't remember.
It was Pickering, the Derby chairman at the time said the only way to control Millwall fans in the new stadium is to build a moat. And the point was made that it was Millwall were having an unfair advantage because it was so intimidating. I thought, well, isn't that the whole? You know, like Liverpool have built a reputation on the cop.
On the cop,
So you're using this, and it was some of the fallout was quite outrageous. But yeah, I mean, I think he stopped short of saying they should have crocodiles in the moat. He actually wanted a moat put in, and he basically said if they don't do something about it, Liverpool will refuse to play there. And it was setting a real dangerous precedent, you know. And the hysteria at the time was unbelievable, but they came through it somehow.
That was early 90s football, though, Merv. It's strange. Yeah. You know, you're of a similar vintage to myself, and I find it quite odd because it doesn't seem that long ago to me. But when you repeat it back, it sounds like Charles Dickens's era, doesn't it? You know, the ideas and attitudes that prevailed at that time. Yeah. But there it is. It's early 1990s, not that long ago.
Pylon, I think, as well. That's the thing. And the funniest thing, the season after that playoff, you got the distinct impression. That Redsburg wanted Millwall to stay off the radar as much as possible, and you know, just wanted to keep out of the way. Just don't say or do anything. Just keep out of trouble because they had this suspended punishment hanging over them.
That's
and
right.
And then of course, sod's law. We draw Arsenal in the cup and Chelsea in the cup, and we almost think that people are conspiring against us to put every little temptation in front of the fans to sort of do it again. You had the Tower Hamlets election, the Sun. Basically managed to link it to Millwall, managed to link the BNP winning the Tower Hamlets by-election to Millwall somehow. It was the Millwall ward, even though it was God knows how many miles from where Millwall played and hadn't played for like 90 years. It was a familiar pylon. You can only imagine what it would have been like in a social media age.
We should be grateful for some small mercies, Merv, that the social media wasn't around then. But
yeah,
so this is part one. It's out now on Amazon, I presume?
And you can get it online as well. After the Lord Mayor Show.co.uk. The title actually comes from something that I used to hear lots at the old den when I was like in my teens. I used to stand with my dad and all his mates and that sort of thing. And as was the Millwall way, we turn up at a home game with Millwall having just pulled off an incredible away win. They'd probably gone to the top of the league team. The anticipation was high for the next game at home to crush someone. And of course, invariably, we'd get beat or we'd lose. And my dad or his mate Ernie would always describe it as after the Lord Mayor Show. I never knew what it meant. And I thought, and I think I asked my mum one day, because what's after the Lord Mayor Show? She said, and she said quite eloquently, well, after the Lord Mayor Show comes the shit heart. So I thought, nice, well, fair enough. And it's stuck with me ever since. So, and I thought that the 90s did feel a bit like that. Because, I mean, like I say, it's quite unique that Millwall coming down, all these years, the thought of Millwall getting promoted to the first division was seen as a joke. The bookies always had them. Favours of relegation, suddenly they were one of the big guys, and they were expected.
Yeah.
You looked at the squad, even though he sold her a lot, and you looked at the squad, Sheringham, of course, came into his own that season.
He did.
And you thought, and suddenly the bookies are saying, well, they should be going up. And that brought a whole new pressure, really, you know, and it just sort of fell away quite dramatically.
We've always been at our best as underdogs. So that weird period when we were, you know, just out of the first division and felt to be, like you say, favourites for something.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Never sat well. It doesn't sit easy on the Mill shoulders, that coat, does it?
I always remember the Lion Roars at the time saying that they'd be quite happy if we were like a yo-yo club and we got, you know, sort of like the Newcastle, the QPR, or the bigger clubs, like, you know, that would yo-yo between first and second divisions, which is a strange sort of ambition, but I think it's a good one because you get the excitement of promotion every now and then, and you know, you've only got to look at Fulham getting taken apart by Arsenal, and you sort of think, are we really that disappointed at missing out in the playoffs last year? I'm not so sure we are, but it's a funny one. I think now more than ever, we don't really know what we want.
So that's after the Lord Mayor's Show, listeners. I'll stick a link to the Amazon in the show notes for this. Merv, you're working on part two, I presume, the late 90s next?
Yeah, because like I say, you've got that crazy season, 95, 96, and then obviously things...
Administration
bad,
follows.
Bad ...for the club, And then in came, obviously, Theo, who was a major player in things, and things... You know, just started to make that upturn, and of course, the decade finished with the first Wembley appearance.
Yeah, that's right, and that would lead us into promotion in the first year of the next decade.
Yeah, so once again, it took sort of like a 10-year I think it was, the 90s, was it was like a 10-year journey of getting used to the new ground, and only sort of towards the end of it did we really feel properly at home there. You know, I think that the overriding feeling when we got relegated in 96 was that it had all been for nothing. We all sort of thought, well, we might as well just stayed at the old ground then. And we've got this white elephant of a stadium, we've got, you know. But yeah, it all came good in the end, which often seems to be the thing with Millwall. But yeah, obviously plenty of thrills and spills along the way, as is always the case. So yeah, I'm looking forward to really getting into that one, and hopefully getting some other ex-players interviewed as well and talking about it.
Wonderful stuff. Well, we'll get you back on the show for that one. So yeah, that's After the Lord Mayor's Show by Merv Payne, available via Amazon. How much is it costing on Amazon,
Merv? $10.99 on Amazon. Yeah, so it's free postage if you've got Prime and all that carry on. So that's actually, yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll stick a link in the show notes. So a big thank you to Merv Payne. Always good to have you on the show, Merv.
Thanks, Nick. Always good to be on.
We'll be back later on in the week with the Real Millwall Fan Show with Aaron Paul and Michael Avery. So until then, do you want to say bye for now, Merv?
Yeah, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to After Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. However, it's actually Millwall. Till next time.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.